This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Well, here we are, back in the car again, driving a guest to the airport. Yes, right?
Our guest. The pandemic's over. Everyone's healed.
We're of course not in a car. We will be one day, but we have a guest today. He's a very funny stand-up comic. He's a writer, director. You can watch, we'll talk more about it, but you can watch his Highwayman series. If you're a fan of The Incredible Hulk or Highway to Heaven, you will fully love it. Everyone put your hands together for Henry Phillips.
Woo!
Hey, thanks guys. Good to be back on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, multiple guests on the show, right? At least once, if not more.
I did one with you guys, and then also there was one where I think you weren't able to make it, Karen, and so I jumped in there, and was it Matt Kershen that we drove around with?
Wow. Yeah, that you have a good memory.
We're talking eight years ago or something.
That reminds me that you're my enemy.
Oh, shoot, I forgot.
Oh, yeah. That was
so much jealousy and competition.
I forgot. It's called the Nemesis episode.
Yes. Face him in a mask.
Like, for all I know, that was a real awkward situation for you guys. And I just bring it up casually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I filled in for you one time.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing up that 3 week long fight that Karen and I had, Henry. No. It was.
Oh, the door slamming. What's weird is, was it 8 years ago? I mean, that is possible.
That sounds
right?
Possible to me. I mean, when did you guys start?
Oh,
D-Y-N-R.
If I do this, it's like, when's our anniversary? Please tell me we haven't done this 10 years. That had to be, I think, about...
It's just under.
7 years, 7, 8 years.
Yeah. It's been a while.
Wow.
We've been doing this into the wind for years. No one ever cared in the beginning. It was great.
Yeah, we were
so free.
Just a tree falling down.
Well,
Henry,
hopefully
new
people.
How have you been in the last 8 years?
I'm sorry?
Have you been in these last 8 years?
You know what? I've been doing pretty well. I'm currently engaged, and to Deborah, you've met Deborah. We all hung out a couple years ago at Tig's place.
That's right.
And
She's
had
great.
A lot of laughs, and yeah, that was probably toward the beginning. That was like 2015 or something. And we're actually going to go to Joshua Tree and have a socially distant ceremony with her friend officiating, and it's going to be very 2020, but it's great for me because I'm like, I don't know. I guess maybe it's because I'm getting older or whatever, but the idea of having a big ceremony with 100 family members and 100 other friends, it's just too much.
It's over the top. It's weird to hear, you know, that have you put out the invitations yet, Henry?
Let's see. Did you get one?
Well, you know,
if you haven't gotten one, then they haven't.
Chris, well, that this is a COVID wedding. It's a COVID wedding.
Exactly.
And they know you're a super spreader. Gonna, yeah, they know what you're like.
Yeah. Yeah.
The bit I was doing for a while is I would, if I was hanging out with a friend, I would say, yeah, by the way, we're canceling the wedding. They're like, oh, wait. And then I'd be like, oh, wait, I didn't invite you anyway. No, that's okay. Just forget about it. Yeah. I got some mileage with that one. That was fun. But no, we haven't sent invitations out yet.
Yes, I was
it'll
totally
be a Zoom thing. We're going to do a Zoom for the friends and family.
Oh, I'd love to get the code for that.
Oh, my God.
Did you? If you just email me a link, I'll watch you like a weirdo.
That is so funny, you guys. And it's probably...
You can tweet it.
It's been happening all year, I bet.
Zoom wedding.
Getting the code for a Zoom wedding.
Oh, well, you
as
know,
if Zoom comedy shows aren't bad enough.
My dad did a Zoom funeral. We set him up in front of the computer, and I got to say he's 92 and he doesn't quite know everything that's going on around him or where he is. And trying to explain to a fully functional 92-year-old what Zoom is already difficult. But my dad's basically, he just thought he was watching a movie. And he, at one point, I set him up with this thing. It was his old golf buddy who had passed away. And then, you know, you can do the type of view on Zoom where anybody who's talking at that moment is the one that pops up. That's like the gallery, whatever view, I don't know, speaker view. And my dad just says fully out loud, it just goes, wow, everybody looks so ugly. And it was like, but you guys know, like, we all have, since we're all comedians, we have friends like Doug Stanhope, you know, who would always like go out of his way to try to make the most uncomfortable situation, and it would work a lot of times. I swear I have never cringed harder than when my dad said it was so unbelievably uncomfortable. I wanted to turn back time because people were just like, what? Who said that? It was like,
it's so like, it's the perfect line, because the situation is tragic.
Oh, exactly.
It's like a tragedy within a tragedy of, like, you know, pandemic.
Everything
funeral.
About it.
Everything about it is sad. And
it was
then
dark.
Boom, he just coming in with a hardcore comedy.
And what I know of your dad, I know him a little bit, that I can see him doing that and it not being mean-spirited, it being in a sweet way.
Yeah.
Like out
he's
of concern.
Observing.
Concern for everyone's faces.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love it so much.
Organist playing in the background. Now, your father, correct me if I'm wrong, but your father was like a recurring character on Cheers.
Yeah, well,
right?
Well, he did one episode of Cheers. He did a taxi. He just worked a lot. There was a show that he was a regular on called All Is Forgiven that was the same people as Cheers. But he's been an actor for... I guess he was probably about 36 when he started acting. He kind of quit his other life and became an actor and did summer stock and stuff like that. And then he started doing Broadway. And then, he landed this part in Taxi. There was an episode called On the Job where everybody loses their job and they went and got other jobs. And Elaine goes to work for my dad, and he just knocked it out of the park. It
all
was
of these,
amazing.
Most of these roles, including, was that show the one? Oh, that's a picture that came with the frame.
Yeah.
Which is the first time that joke, I think.
Oh,
was
yeah.
Home.
Those jokes were
that's
like
the
brand new.
All in the, what was that show?
That was Taxi. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, you can see it on YouTube. His name's Bill Wiley, and but yeah, he knocked it out of the park.
Henry made him a demo reel, and it's on there, right? Isn't
made a demo reel.
So you can see everything he's done.
Yeah.
Oh, was it that on Cheers? It was within the episode. He kept showing up. He was the tour guide.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And
in my mind, that turned into he was on the whole season.
Yeah,
it's so funny.
The slightly tragic story, but I've determined that it's probably not too tragic. But my dad, and I remember he was in the running to be the coach on Cheers, and during that period of time, he got a call for the sequel to the movie Porky's to play basically the villain.
Porky's too.
And and he took it because it was like, well, do I do this pilot that may not even have the part, but it looked pretty good, especially in retrospect. And then maybe the show won't go or whatever, or do I, you know, do a whole
Porky's is movie? A sure thing.
So he did that, and then we just watched Cheers turn into the biggest, most iconic TV show in history. But my dad remained friends with that whole crew, and
yeah, but Cheers was a great show, yeah. But Porky's taught the world about glory holes.
That's right. I didn't know about them as an 11-year-old, and that's how I learned.
Yeah, Bill was part of that teaching.
Yeah, yeah. He was.
Also, I don't, no offense to your dad, but I honestly don't think anybody but Nicholas Colestano, I hope that's how you say his name, but the guy that played Coach.
Oh,
that
yeah.
It was so perfect. Oh, I think we talked about this eight years ago you were on, but
he had that
Cheers
spacey...
was like our favorite show, and he was so just so natural.
He
and
had that spacey thing that I love, you know, like, and Woody had it when he got on there and, but it was such a perfect sitcom, type, you know? And, my dad wasn't quite that. My dad was a little bit more of a, like a loud, maybe a little bit more like a Greg Proops type guy. Like he would always have the suit and like a flawed, guy in a suit sort of thing. If that makes sense. There was a very different classic type of a character.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn the phone thing off.
If I'm not mistaken though, in the Cheers character that he did do kept going back to the bar, giving tours.
Yeah.
Pretending Paul Revere had been there or something. Just so he could drink on the job.
Yeah, he was a tour guide who was giving tours of Boston to tourists, but he kept on saying that the bar was various things, and then he would have them look around and then go do a shot at the bar.
Funny. You would never see so many fun-loving alcoholics on a TV show now. Like, you just don't take that as lightly. You did back then. The roaring.
I blame
80s.
Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Yeah,
I think
they're
really,
very mad.
They shut down.
Were they really upset at Cheers? I wouldn't be surprised. That seems like one of those.
I thought it would be funny to blame an organization you're trying to save people. Then, when that organization started, drunk driving was not illegal.
Yeah, that's true.
it was okay.
That I could see that being a very 80s beef, though, the Mothers Against Drunk Driving and Cheers. I watched a Mormon guy speak, and I generally don't have any beef with Mormons. I have some friends that are Mormons, and but this guy had a problem with the entertainment industry, and I remember him saying that he felt like the fact that they had a TV show about people drinking was the beginning of the end of all civilization.
Oh, wow.
And
he was right. Look where we are. Yeah. He was right.
And I found out later that he had been a child actor.
He was jealous.
Yeah. I think that was like, I'm bitter too, but like, that's a real big
I'm
step
upset.
To take.
Hey, we're all bitter. Come on.
My four wives agree.
Yeah, like my dad probably could have come out and said, yeah, Cheers is the end of all civilization, just because he could have been on it and he wasn't on it. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
That's so good.
I
was just going to ask, will you talk about the show that you just made it's like Highway to Heaven and whatever the other one was?
There's one full episode on YouTube. Generally, they're on Patreon/ Highwayman Show. And it's Deborah and I both came up with the idea, my fiance, and it's kind of Highway to Heaven, and it's also kind of this show from Canada called The Littlest Hobo, which is about a dog that goes from one person to another. And it's like every show is the same, you know. It's like from back then, it's like they would just sort of show up to this area and change everybody's lives and then move on to the next place. And The Incredible Hulk was sort of like that too. So yeah, I have a ridiculously long origin story about the highwayman who was just a regular guy who was helping his friend move, and he severely injured his back. And
due to a freak accident.
He was no longer able to help anybody with anything, and and so he had to go traveling around the highways. And he's just the kind of guy that goes around and we'll see somebody stranded with their car. Well, okay, the whole thing started from one time when my car died when I was in Fresno, and just like the middle of the summer heat, it was just a nightmare. I was in the middle of nowhere, and you know, I'm one of those like long sort of highway drives that was just off the beaten path. And so this guy came up, and he's kind of a long haired guy, and I'm just like going, all right, maybe this guy knows something about cars or whatever. And he came up and he asked me something like if I wanted some kittens or something like that. He had kittens in his... But either way, the reason he was coming up had nothing to do with helping me whatsoever. And when that was resolved, he just went back to his car. And I was like going, man, I've never met a more worthless person ever. So I thought, but he kind of looked like he was going to be a guy that was going to be able to help out. So that's what the highwayman
is. Yeah, that was the scene I saw.
He doesn't know anything about cars. He can't really help. His cell phone never works. He'd like to help you, but he can't really bend because he's got this bad back.
He's living on disability. That's an important part of his character, is he's roaming the world with not a care because he has disability from his back.
Yeah, and he can't really give you a ride because his car's all full of junk, and so he's just a completely worthless guy. But he goes around, and but in some episodes he sort of winds up helping people in a way that you don't expect,
and in some episode he has a jetpack for no reason. It's a very
spoiler alert.
We incorporated a subplot that he finds
and he just takes it across the street.
He has a he finds a box that says USA top secret on it, and he opens it up and it's a jetpack, and so he uses it to help somebody with their car.
But it is the best. And you'll love all the faces in it. There's so many funny people in it. I'm very excited about it because now I'm gonna watch all of them.
Well, can you name a couple of the people that are in it?
Well, let's see. Well, Demorge, you guys know Demorge. He just did an episode.
He's an amazing actor.
A
lot of friends of Patrick Keane's in it. Who's been on the podcast a bunch.
There's in the beginning. Oh, Francisco Ramos is fantastic, and we started it right in the middle of COVID, and it was like, everybody was pretty terrified because we're like, how are we going to do this? And so the first episode, Francisco Ramos, if you don't know him, you should. He's a very funny guy. And so we organized this whole scene where we were both looking straight on so that we're not talking to each other because we're afraid of like, because we can't have masks while we're in there. But we were far enough away. And the crew is literally just myself, Deborah, and our friend Carlos, who's got a camera. And So Francisco has his girlfriend, Brooke, and it was like, all right, well, they're, I never even asked if she was an actor or not, but she turns out to be great. And I think she was, but we were more interested in like, well, can you do a scene close to Francisco? Because since they're a pod, they can, you know? So that was all the decision-making that was going into this thing. And,
well, that's how soap operas are now. They'll like have a body double come in for actual makeout scenes, and all of a sudden the arms will be hairy because it's that actress's real life husband.
Oh.
And all the interaction, they are clearly across the room from each other. And you can tell by the eye line when someone is looking 20 feet away, even if they shoot it to make it look... I laugh. And they're still shooting soap operas like that. It's the only reason I've been watching.
Have to. Soaps. They're the only thing keeping America going right now.
Me alive. Yes.
Yeah.
That's so smart. Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So here's a question about soap operas. Like, we know that TV eventually, like starting with shows like Lost and maybe, you know, all TV since then, like it seems like they've kind of borrowed that formula of the cliffhanger and keeping stories being serialized as opposed to like...
Yeah, you can't just jump in.
Highway to Heaven would be like you start and then you're done and that's the end of the show. Now they all just keep going. But now that we have those in like good TV, like Breaking Bad and Mad Men and all that, why watch a soap opera then is what I'm
right.
saying.
Right, like, why be a
they have extremely good quality shows that are doing the same thing.
I've tried to ask because my dad watches Days of Our Lives now, I believe it is, or One Life to Live, one of the classics, and I don't want to offend him and his wife by asking why, suddenly, this thing we've made fun of our whole lives, why he records it and watches it every episode.
I can answer that.
Okay.
Because as a person, when I was like, I think it was like the summer of like sixth or seventh grade, me and my mom started watching, which one was it? It was Young Julianne Moore was on it.
Young and the Restless. Wow.
What'd you say?
Young and the Restless. You just said young, and so I'm sorry. I guessed too early.
Close, but no, it was one of the other ones, but it was really good. And normally I thought it was so boring, but the second my mom and I would both watch it, and then at a scene when they would just like be staring at each other, and then it would go to commercial.
Yeah.
And we'd be like, oh my God, I thought she liked him, but I guess she doesn't like him. And it was like this weird, they seemed real after a while. So it was like this family that was super fucked up, and people were cheating and doing all crazy shit, and it was like you were checking in on like things to gossip about or something. It was really it like pulled you in the dumbest way, but then kind of kept you because it was like, well, they're down at the docks, and the last we saw, you know, blah 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 was happening, and of course that doesn't actually happen, or you know, everything is the cliffhanger and the kind of like bait and switch. But
yeah,
I think they're kind of written to be addictive, and they've been going on forever.
Yeah, like they mastered the formula. I guess they're just still better at it than even those great shows, because like
there's just the frequency of those callbacks is like 1 minute per episode, whereas in Breaking Bad it's like every other episode has something that you need to have watched previous episodes for.
But yeah, maybe. They just are like doling out crack, you know, like in these soap operas, they're just constantly giving you things that you have to. Yeah. Well, I mean, let's face it. How many times have we been at like a diner or something by ourselves, and then we hear the people talking behind us? It doesn't have to be interesting. Yeah.
Because of the quarantine, eavesdropping was my passion. I would listen to fucking anybody talk about anything.
Oh, yeah.
It was my favorite. And it's like, there's none of it anymore.
Yeah. And it's
so sad.
Yeah. But it's engaging to us to just get into somebody's life. You know, it's really weird.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I miss that too.
To the mall just to stare at people. Now what?
Yeah.
Those are the two things. Eavesdropping on somebody's conversation at a diner, and then after they leave, having a little bite of whatever they were eating. Those are the two things.
Wait a minute.
What's this, chicken salad? I think I've told you this, Chris, but one time me and I think it was Lizzie Cooperman were at the Astro, and I was going in on whatever person that we were gossiping about. We were gossiping. And I would say about 15 minutes later, we've got our food and we're kind of eating. And then the two girls that were sitting in the booth behind us got up, and one was like, I just want to tell you that I'm a big fan of your podcast. So I was like, what? Like within earshot, she heard me just being like, and fuck them because this and that. And then I just suddenly got this sense of like, oh no, I can't like publicly gossip anymore. There's a chance someone will go, I like your podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God she didn't say, I'm a big fan of the person you're talking about. That would have been the ultimate terrible thing. Yeah.
No, that's, yeah, I had that at the airport. There was a little period of time because I had the one kitchen video that just went, you know.
Oh, yeah. Henry's
like more
Kitchen.
Than a million,
the best.
Views. But I would get recognized at airports because that's the one place where like you get just a smattering of every type of demographic, you know. And I was literally, as much as I do anyway, I was getting really pissy with the gate agent, just like, you know. But it's like, you know, I have 3 hours to wait. Why are you going to charge me to get on the earlier plane? There's empty seats. I've been a customer for whatever. And then there's some guy staring at me and he's literally like, just when you're done, man, you're all good now. But like afterward, hey, can we get a picture? Because I'm a fan of the, and I'm just like, oh.
When you're done screaming at her.
Yeah. When you're done screaming, it's so awkward. And then you just have to turn into a real nice person. And
yeah, at LAX, yes. I saw the sweet man that plays the dad on Rushmore. He just passed away, but he's an actor, a character actor.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Seymour Cassell.
Oh, you know his name. How do you do it?
He's a classic. He's a old school classic. And I was just talking to somebody about
him. Okay. Yeah. I just saw him. Someone rented one of those luggage carts and didn't put it back into the track. They just left it near the other carts. And he was screaming at them and calling them lazy. He's like, is it that much harder to put it into the track? That's a problem with the world today. And I'm like, you were such a sweet dad on Rushmore.
That's so funny.
I'm glad that I didn't say, hey, I know who you are, by the way, because it probably would have hurt him.
Hey, Krabby.
Hey, Krabby, man.
That's what I feel like the girl of the Astro should have been like, hey, bitch, I'm a big fan of your voice. Yeah. You're just bitching, bitching privately.
Oh, man.
We were just talking about that word, but it's kind of a subject change.
Your
friend that helped you made Punching the Clown.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the best.
His use of the word bitch, which is a word I don't like to use. I never have.
Let me go back, though. So Greg, he's the guy that is the director and co-writer of the movies that we've made. Punching the Clown was the first one.
Yeah.
We met in college at UCLA. And
congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
yeah.
You did your homework.
Political science majors. And
Wow. Poli sci. Wow.
Chris, don't get jealous.
Hey, art is a legitimate major.
So you would have like 1,000 people in every class, except for the way that they sort of got that intimate teaching experience is they would also have little discussion groups where there'd be like maybe 10 people and one teacher's assistant. And so that's where I met Greg. And Greg is a French national. He was born and raised in France and went to Paris University. He is French, as French as you can be, except that his mother is American.
Yeah, I've met him and he has zero accent.
So when he grew up learning English because of his mother, he speaks English with an accent that none of us would ever know that he was from a foreign country. So if somebody from a foreign country says something that's the wrong word, then we correct them, or it's like it's obvious why they did it. But with Greg, you have no idea why this person just said that. So this is a great example. Like, I guess that at one point he must have asked his mom what the word bitch meant. and she said putain, which is a generally derogatory term for a woman. It actually is more like a prostitute. It's like saying a whore. So she just kind of like said, well, that's the same general gist, but he took it literally to mean like, oh, a bitch is someone who is a prostitute.
A woman of the evening. Yeah.
Yeah. He thought a prostitute was bitch and that they were equivalent. So cut to, you know, we're in this discussion group at UCLA and this, having a discussion about, you know, about, international politics or whatever and municipal politics. And at one point Greg raises his hand and he's like, you know, it's kind of interesting because in Paris right now they're having a problem with bitches where like they'll be, you know, I mean, tourism is a major part of Paris and the economy and everything. So you'll get American tourists that are trying to eat and they'll get harassed by like French bitches. We'll go up to them and start
the
talking.
Just like, what's the word you're saying?
She's
right
like,
now?
What? She couldn't believe her ears. Like, what are you saying? And then he's like, bitches, you know, bitches. And then he would double down on it, you know? And she's just like, what are you talking about? Like, what do you mean? And it was awkward. And then I didn't know that he was from France, but I was like, this guy's cool.
Yeah, see, he has no accent.
This guy rules.
This
he doesn't
guy's
give a fuck.
Really weird.
And then another time they had a party or something. And Henry, I've heard this story. That's why I'm telling it. He said, Henry came over. He said, hey, do you want anything to eat? We have leftover pee if you want to.
Yeah.
He's like,
he was trying to say pie, but he pronounced it pee.
Yeah. In
we,
a normal
we have way. Some pee. I'm like, no.
I don't drink pee. No. But it's leftover. I'll try
like
it.
The idea that he's doing it all with a person. Perfectly American.
Oh, yeah, that's the best part of it.
Makes it sound like he's an asshole fucking with people and just going, I'm French. Sorry, I'm French. And
yeah.
I'm French. Sorry, I thought bitches were whores. Where it's like, guess what, dude? All of this doesn't work. Like, fuck you.
Yeah. It's such a. No, I'm completely French.
It's, but yeah, he is the nicest, he's so friendly that his personality, it would confuse everyone because there's
it just comes out of left field.
That's great.
Is it right field? Ice cream?
Right field or left field? It comes out of center field, which actually you'd think that's you'd expect, but any fly ball is hard to catch, honestly.
If the sun's in your eyes, center field, you're screwed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Look at me, I can be one. That's a John Fogerty song. Hey,
hey.
Since we last talked, we have a new president-elect.
That's right.
I didn't get the chance to dance in the streets with you.
Oh, I loved the video you sent me, though. Chris, on the day, apparently left his apartment, went down. He heard the children in the streets and sent me a video of everybody on Sunset Boulevard dancing to Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody.
And they were,
and it was so fucking cool looking.
I thought great. The news was going to use that video. I captured such a joyous moment because everyone was jumping and singing together. And I swear, I was just walking the grocery stores around the corner. I walked through at like 10 in the morning when the news was first solidified, and there was 20 people, I guess. But I was like, oh, cool, they're dancing outside a barbershop. And then my buddy Jim texted and said, oh, my God, you have to see the street. And it was people dancing on city buses and the entire street. And there was no police there. It was just happy people. So even the bus driver was like, all right, yeah, me too. I'm happy, but I got to take these people that aren't on unemployment to work right now. But it was so great. And everyone had a mask on, even though everyone was saying I was at a super spreader event or something. It was just a beautiful, maybe not the safest, but it was so.
Well, you know what?
That's great.
But to me, because it was like the thing where those are all the people that probably have been very careful. Most of those people, if they were wearing a mask in the street, you know, they're probably conscientious.
Yes. But, I didn't recognize any of them.
Right. Exactly. And but we've all been stuck, you know, in our houses and alone or just with one other person for so long. And then on top of that, it's like the fucking Wicked Witch is dead. I mean, there's people who are dancing because it might keep them alive that he is that he's gone.
Yeah.
And it was just such.
Yeah.
True,
people have.
I feel like a lot of average Americans like myself haven't felt that level of like we're so close to
elation. Yeah.
It's just so scary. It's been so consistently scary for years and years and then just getting worse and worse and worse.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's just beyond. I was afraid people wouldn't celebrate
because
everyone's so down in the dumps.
I didn't expect it. Yeah. Or I expect doubt, you know, well, let's wait till the next few days. All these mail-in ballots come in. No, they were ready right then. And if someone showed me video footage of me kind of hiding in a doorwell, just watching people dance and like crying at the sight of it, you would think I would enjoy music festivals more or something.
Well, that was
my favorite part. There's definitely dudes in the street who are like, I have to dance because this is a momentous occasion, but I am not comfortable.
Yeah.
So everyone around them is or whatever. And then there's some dudes that are just kind of like, it's only 2 p.m. So I don't have enough to drink to make this work.
Yeah.
I can't be not self-conscious. I never would have done it.
Just
I would not
sober dancing
it.
That if they were drinking would turn into Elaine Bennis Seinfeld dancing. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Erratic arm gestures. But
plus, still, as being beautiful. That type, that demographic of person, it's like knowing now that there's cameras everywhere that you can be the next viral guy that everybody's making fun of with your dancing. It's like, forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next viral, terrible dancer celebrating.
I have no problem with that kind of thing. Since I'm a comedian, if it's something that I'm doing, but actually one of my worst fears is that I'm doing something unintentionally funny and then it goes viral.
Yeah. That and punching the clown, the second one.
Yeah.
A cigarette, someone gives him a cigarette and it starts burning his hair and he does this weird erratic movement and falls off stage. And that's what goes viral and makes the record company interested in his work because there's all these hits on this video and they just want him to do.
Yeah.
Or I'm maybe not doing it.
No, that's exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, so funny. J.K. Simmons is in that, by the way.
Oh, shit.
From Missoula, Montana. So now we have a former president that will, it's kind of like when, like if someone graduates from college or they don't graduate and pretend that they did at top of the class and they won't leave their parents' house and they just start putting up posters and listening to Pink Floyd. And the parents, I feel like they're just going to have to let him rent a room there because he's not going to leave.
Or he's going to, around Thanksgiving, go down to Mar-a-Lago in Florida and never come back. Because we are watching a toxic, malignant narcissist, I believe is like the clinical term.
Yeah.
Who cannot, admit fault. They can't take responsibility. Nothing can ever go against them. And it's like the angry drunk dad at the pizza parlor who's like embarrassing his little league son and then decides, sit here. You know what I mean? Like, we're like, how does this end with a person who behaves like this and cannot their ego is so out of control and they're so out of control that like, what do you do? And I think Joe Biden's doing the perfect thing, which is he's fucking ignoring him.
He's just
doing the work.
Well, and also, like I was thinking, what if everybody in America, well, at least half of America anyway, just contributed to a fund to pay him to leave? Like, we'll give you millions of dollars. Just get out of here. We'll pay off that massive amount of debt.
He'll take the money.
It would be worth it for us.
He'll take the money.
Like, I will just pay you out of my own pocket to just never, ever see you again.
It turns out that the money in the briefcase, because we're going to put it in a briefcase and we're going to put it out in the front door. So he's actually out of the building.
Yeah.
That money is paper money. It's not real. And then we get him out. But then it's like, fuck you. We don't have to pay
and
you.
He's
you
like,
bullshit scammer. Yeah. Whatever.
Well, it's little squares of cheesecloth, sucker.
You know,
maybe I'll make that a highwayman with your permission, because that's a great idea.
Absolutely, but I would like EP credit on that. So.
For sure.
That is my, it is my favorite thing when someone throws a fit and they sit, they make themselves stay there, or better, they throw a fit and leave. And then have to come back in.
Come back.
Because they, one time before he had his infamous set where he said terrible things, Michael Richards, Kramer from Seinfeld, was at the Improv. This was like a week before that happened. And he was screaming at Ben Glebe.
Oh, I remember that.
He was
God.
Like, you're not even on the level, man.
That was so uncomfortable.
He was so angry. And he left. He slammed the door. And then he came back in. He's like, I left my cell phone somewhere. Can we all, can the staff, and they had to,
let's all get together and help you look for it.
Yeah. And they found his phone and then he got mad and yelled again and left again. It was the best.
Wait, Ben Glebe on stage? I'll explain.
So Ben Glebe used to run this College Humor. Remember that show? It was like called College Humor or whatever. And it was just a big,
It is.
So Ben was like a 26 year old guy or whatever who was running this show. And I guess that when Ben Glebe made the flyers, he said Seinfeld's Kramer. And apparently somebody was supposed to have told Ben that you can't say that. You just say Michael Richards.
you can't say
Seinfeld because, I don't know, he just had a hang up about it.
He's only proud of his role in UHF.
So even, let's say in this scenario, let's just say that Ben Glebe is completely guilty of whatever he was being accused of. It's a 26-year-old guy being yelled at by a 50-year-old multi-millionaire.
He was poking his finger in his chest.
It's just not a good look. Like, how could something have gone that wrong in your life because of whatever this 26-year-old guy did? So, he had issues for sure.
Well, and in retrospect, clearly, he was yelling because he wasn't supposed to be on the flyer, but really what was going on is he should not have been doing stand-up comedy.
Right.
And once he got there, he knew it.
Right.
And the pressure began to build. So now there's all these people, because you're so funny on Seinfeld because writers write for you and it's a physical thing.
Oh, you're right.
But he clearly, from that fucking set at the Laugh Factory, he didn't have an act. he thought he was going to just go up and just be able to kind of just be adored. And he probably got in there and you were on stage, and there's people who, it's happened to me many times where you're standing in the back and you're like, oh fuck, my stuff isn't good enough for this. And you fold internally and you give up and you're bum out. But he, like, he didn't even have a thing to rely on. Yeah. That's why it got so bad at the other crazy set where he just
I'll even give him the credit of thinking, oh, I'm going to be able to work out anonymously, work out some material. And damn it, there's all these adoring fans. I didn't want that. Now I'm mad.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's a worst case. Yeah, I don't think I have that in me. I've always seen you lash out. No. I mean, I've always stuck out the time, but like when a set's going really, really bad, like I've always stuck it out, and I've stuck through some really awful ones. I go into a mode kind of like what you're talking about with Biden. I just ignore them and I just do my act as if it's a speech that I'm doing, and you know, and but I can't. I've never been somebody to think that I'm the one who's right and they're wrong.
I've seen what you do. One time, we were in Little Rock, and the audience was terrible, and someone was heckled, I can't remember what with, and then Henry,
I was
just
having a terrible set,
and Henry just kind of got bummed out, and he's like, well, you know, as a comic, you just want to kind of make people happy, and I guess tonight I'm not quite doing my job, but I hope your guys' night ends up well. And they were all like, oh no, and then they all turned on that lady.
Oh yeah, because this lady who was heckling me, and oh yeah, that's right, she said something particular, like, you know, get off or you suck or whatever. And then that's when I was like, you know, you're probably not even wrong. It's like, I'm terrible. And maybe this was a bad idea.
My calling
afterward, everybody turned on that lady. And afterward, I'm at the lobby and like some cowboy guy comes up to me and he's like, hey man, give me two of those CDs and don't pay no mind to that lady. She's crazy, you know? And I'm just selling them. It was like the end of, you know, one of those Charlie Brown episodes.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You emotionally manipulated them.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You.
And then I go to the next town and do the same thing, you know? I get people to feel sorry for me.
Oh, man.
That's a good thing to fold into the highway, man.
The best thing that happened, though, is one time I was on the road and I had a really, really awful set and people were walking by while I was trying to sell my merchandise. And it's just excruciating. I hate that I ever had to go through this situation, but this one guy came up to me and he looked like Sam Elliott and he goes, you know something? I think what you're doing is really good. And whether there's people that understand it or not, don't listen to them. You keep doing what you're doing because it's good. It's special. And I think people eventually are going to know about that. All right. And I'm like, wow, thanks. I felt like so good. And then he said something like, that one about, don't look now because mama's got her boobs out. And I was like, wait, that wasn't me. That was the guy. That was the other guy before me. And then I realized he was giving this whole awesome speech to somebody that he thought was the other guy.
Yeah, yeah. He just
had Oh, no, you suck. Sorry. I'm trying to find the guy who got boobs out. So.
I forgot. No, it was your face that I thought was okay.
That's
but
right.
It was the other guy's material that I enjoyed. Also in Little Rock, not to be... stories are great. Henry,
it's the best.
Henry
Let's
lost
talk about
his...
the times we ate it the most.
Yeah. Oh, God. I got so many.
I got so many.
Way too many.
That same funny bone in Little Rock. We went into a sandwich place and you left your guitar in there.
That was awful.
He thought he'd lost his guitar and someone brought in a guitar for him to borrow. And it was, do you want to take it over from here?
I don't think I remember.
Okay. And so he had to borrow this guitar and they made a big deal about it. And then at the end of the show, he opened his trunk and the guitar was in the trunk. He just forgot.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like I guess we were drinking back then.
There was a lot of drinking.
When you're in a town like that, you enjoy the local spirits.
Well, it's how you get to know the people.
Yeah. get to a point where you're allowing the people to get to know you. Yes. And
yeah, wow, that got quiet.
This is just putting me in the mind of all the times I did this agent that booked me on all these college gigs, and I probably had 20 minutes of LA comedy, which means in the real world you have 7 minutes of actual yeah. relatable comedy that anyone would give half a shit about.
Yep.
And I was on this tour where I was supposed to be doing an hour. Oh. And so before every show, I would just be sitting in my room writing out like what the actual chunks I could be doing were, and then places I could possibly go to just how am I going
to
do this?
To
and
then fill I'd be the like, time.
And I'll do crowd work or this or that. But it's like, I was barely a good enough comic to do 15 minutes, much less to work the crowd here and work the crowd. And it was so stressful. But by the end of the tour, so it started awful. And there was a couple shows where like, I owe people money because of how, I mean, it was disastrous. I actually, at one point, I remember being in this little tiny, it almost looked like it was like a side theater, and everything was carpeted inside it, but it was kind of like a diamond shape. So the stage was this triangle that I was standing on, and there was probably 25 seats in this room. And I tried to talk slow and I tried to work the room, but it was dry as a bone in there. Ugh. And then I just started going, does anybody have any questions about Hollywood? That I didn't have like bits to answer. I was just trying to kill time.
Oh, yeah.
It was, I mean, when it's bad, it is the worst fucking experience.
No, yeah. And I did those colleges, and you really want them to go to well, because the amount of money that you're getting is way disproportional to what
yes.
it's like. But yeah, they were brutal. I stopped. I did 10 of them in as many days, and I came back to LA and bought a car. And I told them I never ever want to do another one of those again. Like, I felt dirty. I felt like I wanted to quit. I was just like, I got my car. It was just like, you know, just...
It was so hard.
Yeah, it was really, really... Yeah, it was soul drenching. Yeah,
yeah, even that I don't miss. I, of course, miss doing stand-up, but a lot of people are posting their acts from before this all was happening just to keep their Instagram active or whatever. And some of my favorite comics are in front of audiences that still... It'll be a club that I like, and they're heckling, they're drunk... They aren't listening, and they're having to deal with crowd work that was flung upon them. I don't miss that at all.
It's
at
the
all.
Worst.
You yeah, would think awful. The absence would make my heart fond for it, but no, no, not at all.
But, oh,
well, because the bad times are the worst. So it's like the good for me, and the way I'm set up, the good times are like, even if they're amazing, I just immediately dismiss them as like, nah, fine, good. I got what I wanted. But yeah. The bad time, I can walk you through like the time I had to follow Darren Carter, who used to be called Darren Carter, the party starter.
Sure.
And he closed with that uncanny impression of Bart Simpson on a skateboard where he turned his head and looked exactly like the cartoon. And that was his closer with music under.
I would not want to follow Darren.
No, never. Yeah. He was a dyed-in-the-wool club comic who talked about super relatable stuff.
Yeah.
And like, I grew up in this kind of neighborhood, yeah. And here's what I'm like. He was like by the book.
Yeah.
And I was standing over on the side with my personal observations about myself, where I was like, I'm fucked. This will not go well.
Personal observations about myself is a great way to describe just the comedy I've been trying to do my whole career. And I just realized I've been wrong.
When I did my half hour special, this is I guess 2004 or something like that, Dan Natterman was the guy who did his before, and he is a monster of a comedian. I mean, he is just amazing, so funny, fast, relatable, like perfect economy of words, everything. And I had to go after him, and I just remember thinking this irony. It's like every laugh that he got like hurt me, because I was like, I have to go and try to compete with that, because they're all in that mode and I don't have what he has. I'm going to be pulling it into a whole other place. And as it turns out, my half hour special wasn't that good. I laughed because it sounded like that was going to be one of those things. As it turned out, it went fine, but no, it was terrible. But
where's the there's no happy ending?
But I just remember the irony of going like, there's so many happy people and I'm so upset right now. It's like, this is so bad. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a tough one.
That's the thing. It's the comparison, right? That's fucks everybody up. But it took me so long to learn that all you have to do is have the confidence to know that they don't expect everyone to be the same.
Yeah.
You're just there doing your thing. And that's like, I had to learn that after years of watching people. Patrick Keane, I watched him do this set one time and he had to follow. Someone did a drop in. Someone famous like fucking David Spade did a drop in.
Yeah.
Came just fucking. It was wall to wall destruction. There was no one left alive. And then here comes Patrick Keane. And I was just like, my heart was breaking for him. Yeah. And he just went and brought it just all right fucking back. It was masterful. Yeah, and it was him talking slowly, just talking calmly, doing his jokes, playing the reality of the room. Whereas if it were me, I'd be like, hi guys, that guy anyway.
And the quiver in the voice. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'd have. Yeah. No, Patrick, back in the bitter redhead, I've seen Patrick and I mean, I've seen him go up for 10 minutes with not one person laughing and not even a little bit shaken by it. He doesn't speed up his act. He just kind of still looks at the wall and I moved out when I was 7. My parents moved out with me, you know, and he'll just keep doing that same delivery. And it doesn't, and I can't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. His stand up lends itself to that. If you're self deprecating and you're playing some sort of an unaware loser on stage, you can, it's the best. It's the best. I wish I did what he did.
Yeah. And that skill.
Chris, you seem like an unaware loser.
Thank you. I mean, I was sort of fishing for that. And I honestly, I don't have to worry. Now that Do You Need a Ride fans come to shows, I don't have to. I haven't experienced what I'm talking about for a couple of years. I'm lucky.
Before we get too far ahead, I want to go back because out of context, it sounded awful when I said I saw Patrick do 15 minutes with nobody left.
No, but I've seen that.
It's pretty important for people outside of the business to know that he's incredibly funny. I'm just saying that happens to everybody. The amazing part was that he had the skill to keep going. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, because they do and this is, you know, so inside baseball, but so often, especially throughout the 90s, they couldn't stop putting comedy shows in places where no one wanted a comedy show. So hard enough to do a stand-up set at the Improv at, God forbid, the Laugh Factory or somewhere like that. But suddenly now you're at Farfalla on Hillhurst and there's people trying to eat a nice meal and who have paid good money. And all of a sudden you're up there like, well, anyway, I'm Irish, whatever, where it's like, get out. I would always get so self-conscious. For the people. It's like, no one wants this.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not good.
I met Karen at Lucy's laundromat. We were doing a show to people separating their whites. Like, it was with a bathroom behind you. It was the most.
You did your set in front of a bathroom.
Unlikely place to do comedy. For good reason.
Well, that's where this great line from Charlie Shannon, who's no longer with us, but he was an Austin comic. But somebody told me this story, one of the Austin comics, I assume, but about how he finally realized he was done with Austin when he was following a mother and daughter comedy team. And he was like, yeah, this is just too ridiculous. And he went out to LA and was just hustling and trying to get whatever gigs he could. And he finally landed the laundromat gig. And the night he was there, it was literally the mother and daughter team, and he had to go after him. And he's on stage, and he's like, yeah.
Oh, God.
He's like, so now I'm still following the mother and daughter comedy team, but this time I'm doing it in a laundromat. Like, that was a very downward move.
To his credit, it was Melissa and Joan Rivers.
Yeah, which is great.
They're killers.
No, yeah. Over the years, I've seen all these acts just pop up.
Dude, you know what that just made me think of? At the Improv, the Improv in the 90s became this place where everyone's agent got hip that they would give you a TV deal if you were a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
So all these actors just started coming in and memorizing monologues. And there was a woman one time, and, you know, sorry if you... whatever, but she was from the South and she went on stage barefoot. And then it was all the hackiest jokes about women and husbands and periods and everything you've ever seen. But also this thing of like, she's literally like a barefoot hillbilly. And I just remember standing on the side and just going like, I don't know why I'm here or how I fit into anything that's happening in this town. It doesn't make sense. Oh, yeah. It's not good. These people love it. I fucking hate it. Like, I must be in the wrong. Like that thing where you just kind of like, I feel like every time I did a set of comedy, I lost my vision of what the point of my career was supposed to be, because I would see what was happening and I'd just be like, yeah, I don't do that. What am I going to do? Like, what's going to happen now?
But you forged ahead and you took off your shoes and you went up after her.
There are people going on stage. Like, there was a girl. This is the old 80s version. Was there was a woman who used to do her whole act wearing her bridal gown because it cost her so much money.
Oh my God, I remember.
The most use out of it. Remember that? Yeah, then there was a girl that used to go on stage carrying her purse and shopping bags, and it was like this character of like, I just love shopping and I just stopped shopping and shit like that, where I'm like, ladies, could we get together and make some agreements of what we are and are not going to do on stage? Because this is, then I get on stage and I'm just like, did anyone see the high speed chase? And they're like, where's your gimmick? We don't give a shit.
I saw a girl go on one time at the Improv, and she was kind of doing the ditzy blonde act or whatever. And she goes, ooh, I'm sorry, I just dropped something. And then she turns around and literally bends over so that her skirt comes up and you just see her thong and her ass. And then it's nobody's laughing. They're all just like, woo, yeah. And then she gets back up. And I was like, what was that?
Wow.
I can't compete with that.
She kept going. I mean, that wasn't her closer?
No, that was her opener.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. So to get it? All right. All right.
Oh, I get it now. Closer. I think the reason to defend LA, which I always do because I'm from here, you know, I just feel like LA is whatever people want it to be. Like, there's so many different things going on. Obviously, I remember seeing you at Largo, and that whole scene was the one that I was gravitated to because it was so, you know, incredible. But yeah, there was also when you went to like LA Cabaret on Ventura Boulevard, there was a whole different world of comedy going on there. And every now and then they would intersect and it was weird. But I feel like other places have a more cohesive, like when you go to the Minneapolis Acme Comedy Club at the open mic night there, you'll see like 30 comics, but, and they're all fantastic, but they all have this, you're not going to see like somebody who's like, wow, that person looks like a complete, it's LA. So you get all these people from making it whatever LA they want it to be. Like even in New York, like when I'd go to New York, and maybe it's only the shows that I went to, but there was a cohesiveness there too. Everybody was a certain level of, you know, it was always a little bit more fast paced, but there were always jokes and they were solid delivery and everything. But in LA, it was really eclectic in terms of the style that people were going for was all over the map.
At Largo, you guys both used to do Largo a lot, right? Which to me has always been.
I didn't. I did right toward the end of the old location. And I was so proud.
Yeah, it seems like a place that always successfully combined music and comedy, though. There's not a lot of places that pulled it off. And you two are both people that also successfully combined music and comedy. And I wonder, do you feel like if Largo was Largo a big part of that for you, at least, Karen?
Yes, for sure.
Like,
first
dictating.
Of all, I'd like to say, the credit, full credit for, I mean, aside from Flanagan, who's the owner and he has great taste and whatever, and he was smart enough to go, we should be doing comedy here because he, you know, he's the one booking all the music. But he was smart enough to pull in Lisa Langgang. And Lisa Langgang, when I started in San Francisco in 1990, she ran the Improv in downtown San Francisco. She was the manager of that club.
Oh, wow.
So she knew all those people. And then there was like a mass exodus in like 94, everyone moved to LA and she did too. She got a job at Comedy Central and she was so good at picking talent. Like she saw Flight of the Conchords and brought them over and had them perform at Largo.
Oh,
like,
wow.
She is one of those people that had such good taste.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think that she set that table, but she also knew that the kind of quote unquote alternative style could get very much up its own ass and be like, use the fact that it wasn't old school club style. And then just you're there watching someone read a notebook and it's boring. So she would book those shows. Like, that's how I met Greg Fitzsimmons, who is a classic club comic in every way, who can do any kind of show he wants because he's so good. He's just such a natural. So that's it was that kind of thing where I started to learn you don't have to get into this like box. You don't have to tell yourself you do it one way or the other, because the point is stand on stage with confidence and say good jokes. That's all.
Yeah.
So like that became for me, instead of this kind of like, you know, what I think the cafe thing did, which was make go, here's what I did today, whatever. Yeah. And instead you got competitive because you were like, well, I want to be at least as funny as the person who went on before me. Me personally, I was always like, I need to win the whole thing or whatever. So I'd just be like out of my mind. But it was a good, like, I think she pulled in all these people that kind of, for me, taught me what good comedy actually is, how it actually works.
Yeah.
And that's authenticity and confidence.
It's
and like,
so funny to me that it took halfway through my career to find out that confidence was a big part of being successful on stage.
Right?
I really, even my character on stage was someone that was pretending not to have confidence. So I would have to confidently do that when I was stammering and making mistakes. What an obstacle I made for myself. I don't know why I did the confidence. I still need to remind myself. They want to see you be confident, not just funny.
It's like
fledgling. Fledgling.
Yeah.
That's what I am.
It's probably like a very obvious example, but like if you're on a plane and the pilot, whatever personality they may have, the one you don't want is for them to be like, not really sure exactly what a lot of this, I'm like the worst when it comes to flying. And it's like, no, I want you to be really good, you know, but I don't think that's such a crazy analogy, because it's like in any situation, you want the person that is driving the whole thing to be good at what they do, even if their act is being completely, you know, self-deprecating. That's a different thing.
But I guess I've always put a thin line between cockiness and confidence. And I always appreciated when people were good at what they do, but they let you find out about it. They didn't tell you they were good or put on some vibrato. You're just watching them. And they're like, wow, this is the best pilot I've ever seen fly a plane. And he's hardly said anything except buckle your seatbelts. And so I always want people to find out that I'm confident, but it, you kind of got to put it on a little. You have to pretend a little.
And I have to tell you guys, as a female comic, you have to do it even more, because people, you walk on stage and people get afraid for you about what other people are going to start doing.
Oh, I hate that.
There's a real weird vibe change. If you're like first, if four comics go and then it's you, they get real like, you almost hear people start talking or whatever. And it's like a little bit like that. And if you, I found, and at least this was my impression, that if you don't immediately have like boom boom, if you can't just go, dude, I made you laugh twice, now we're doing this.
If I
took any time at the top, it would unwind way quicker than if a guy was doing it, because I believe there was a lot of people who would just be like, oh no, she shouldn't be doing, you know, it's like protect her kind of mentality.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I would come up and just be a fucking asshole most of the time, or just be like, blah, 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 you this, get that off the table or whatever. And just be like, this is my house. Even though it was completely fake. It was all this kind of fake confidence and aggression, but it was the way to say, don't fucking worry about me. I will take care of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
It felt very necessary.
I'm glad that I've seen that changing for the better over the years.
For sure.
But it's about goddamn time. And we're going backwards in enough other ways. So,
but it's funny because this is the old cliche of, it's like, can you learn that in a class? Can somebody tell you on week one, always be confident? It's like, you kind of have to learn it. You have to learn why you have to do it. You know, it's like,
yes. What it means to you, because like if you watch Patrick Keane, you'd go, he's confident, but he also kind of seems like he doesn't care. It comes out in these different ways, which are funny in themselves, because that's what it's like. That's the authentic part, is like, I don't care what you think of me, but then also here's a little of this other thing.
That's the line.
It's like
confidently pretending you don't care. That's the goal.
It's like, make no mistake, for people out there, that you can't just be confident. That's not enough. You also have to have humor. You know?
Of course.
Because
you have to have at least 7 solid jokes.
Yeah. We've all seen that person who's way too confident and they have nothing. It's like, oh, come on. Oh, come on. You got guys, look at this guy's looking at me like this. And it's just like, you just didn't say anything. You know, it's like,
I just, can I tell you my favorite? And I know I've told the story on this podcast. No, okay.
It's been 8 years. We just found out.
This is my favorite moment of the confidence issue and the me interpreting that as like kind of like aggression or bitchiness, which is very 90s. I mean, that's what everything was like back then. But there was this one night, and I believe it was me being on stage after Darren Carter Party Starter. And, you know, I'm three jokes in eating it, but I'm telling them I'm eating it. You know what I mean? Like, there was no way I was going to get up there and interpret anything as success, because he just leveled it. So anything was going to seem worse and bad compared to how great he did. So I'm doing, you know, like whatever my first three jokes are, and it's like fart, fart, fart. And then I hear a beep to my left. You know how in the improv, you know, people are kind of around you. Did you not get just in front of you,
heckled
but on the side.
By a pacemaker, I'm guessing.
I turn and I go, oh, I'm sorry, are you a doctor? Is that your beeper? Do you have to go? Do you have to go deliver a baby? And I just like went off on this guy. And I literally said like seven sentences, like I overdid it out of this kind of like, I'm eating it and I hate everyone. And then he just held up his wrist and went, it was my watch.
Oh my God. Like, so great.
It was just, I think I did one more joke and then left, because I was just like, I'm not okay. Like, I can't stand up here anymore. So this great. Is fucking torture. And he didn't. The worst part was he wasn't mean about it. He was trying to be nicer. He's like, it's just my watch. I don't know what to tell you.
I can see myself taking it further. Well, why would you buy a watch like that? And why would you wear it? Oh, God, I'm dying.
I'm dying. That's like, I'm literally dying.
When you say that they're not trying to be mean, that's almost the worst. Like, there was a guy, Chuck Bartel. Do you know him?
I remember that name.
He's extremely funny, one-liner guy, like that Hedberg kind of style. And he was up one night, but he was not immune to having bad sets. It was one of those things where, like, if it started off wrong, then it all went wrong, you know?
And, yes.
But he was so funny. But I remember right in the middle of a bad late Friday show or whatever, he did a joke, and then he did just that little bit of commenting on how bad the response was. He said something like, you know, boy, maybe I'm not as good as this as I thought, or something like that. And this lady in the audience is like, she sounded like she might have been 65 years old, but she's just like, well, it's hard. Like that. You know, it's just like, and he's just like, all right, I want to kill myself.
It's just like, that's so great. The most logical.
Well, it's hard. It was like, oh boy, you did not. Because there's like, it's completely sincere, you know?
Oh my God.
Nobody's trying to be mean.
That is the best. I love that.
Oh man, that was great.
Well, Henry, you have a dinner to go to, and we've
That's right.
I want you to be able to get out of here and not disappoint your friends and family.
Sure.
But
it's a 5:30. Yeah.
I've been thank you for
any
being
questions
here.
About Hollywood?
Yeah.
We'll call back.
Yeah. Does La Cienega, what really direction does it go? Okay.
I just moved there. Should I get an apartment on West Hollywood?
Yeah. Should I go through a realtor, or how much are parking tickets? Will my dreams come true?
I love the idea. People, it's like, do you have any questions about Hollywood? And they immediately assume that it's about the city itself.
Yeah, exactly.
How is money allocated with Parks and Recreation? Does that come out of a municipal? Okay.
Is there a comptroller for LA itself?
Comptroller? No one comptroller. Knows. But there's one in every city.
How long before, because we've become such a dystopian wasteland lately, with just like, if you go La Cienega and Pico, and it's like everything's boarded up, people are wearing masks, there's just people walking around aimlessly. And at what point does like that LA story kind of stereotype change to, like, if you're going to pitch something like, well, I want this to be sort of an LA stereotype, and it's like, oh, really? Okay, so just like red sky from the fire, and then just sort of like a like they're picturing more of a Blade Runner thing or something. Like the whole LA thing seems to be moving away from us right now. I hope it comes back, but it's not like the rollerblading and the thong bikini kind of stereotype anymore right now.
Although I did just take a masked headshot, a new headshot with a mask on.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
time to adjust to the times.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
I am smart.
I am. Be confident.
I'm gonna end this thing because it's been so great. I can only ruin it from here. Or one of you guys.
Thanks, Henry.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's so funny. It's so great to talk to you because you've always been one of my favorites.
Yeah. See,
thank you.
Right.
You too.
Yeah, she's good at this, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Podcasting thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a thing.
But also, we've had so many parallel experiences. It's amazing when you're talking about all this stuff. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Same deal.
I really think Karen's going to make it.
Guys, thank you.
And let's go get something to eat. We're going to go. Watch The Highwayman on.
I'm going to do it right now.
Patreon.com/Highwayman Show. And you can see the teaser on there. And there's a free episode on YouTube called Boots the Clown.
Yes. And I just watched it and I loved it so much. And you can see him also as my real life friend, Henry Phillips. You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYNAR!
Nice.
Are you leaving or are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim, give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off style. We wanna welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
With Karen and Chris.